afternoon, everyone. We have Aaron Marks, and he's going to talk to us about the WAPO language and tell you about his co-presenters.
So my two co-presenters, Desiree and Joanne, unfortunately couldn't make it out to Hawaii in this time. Hopefully in a future conference, so I'm going to be presenting. The WAPO people we work with are the indigenous inhabitants of eastern Sonoma County and western Napa County in Northern California, which, if you know California geography, is just about an hour north of San Francisco, the SF Bay Area, and it's the region that's really well known for its wine production, so California wine country. The current WAPO population lives in and around Santa Rosa, which is an old mission city, and throughout the surrounding area to the Alexander Valley, Dr. Garrett, and up towards Russian River Valley and Clear Lakes. So here's a map of the WAPO homeland, which I've circled in orange. Historically, there were four dialect bands found in that orange circled area, which is the Alexander Valley, and then a fifth one on the south shore of Clear Lake, which is the lake that's north of there. Genetically, WAPO language is a member of the Yukian family, which is only found in California. The other members are referred to as Yuki, or three parts, Yuki proper, Coast Yuki, and Huchnam. These are found further north in Mendocino County, along the coast, northern coast of California. And they comprise a separate branch of Yuki, so there's WAPO on one side and the other Yukian languages on the other side, genetically. Previous linguists included Paul Radden, who worked with WAPO speakers in the 1920s and collected some texts and wrote a grammatical description, and Jesse Sawyer from UC Berkeley, who worked with Mrs. Laura Fish Summersall, who was one of the last, if not the last, fluent native speaker of the language. And most of that fieldwork was done in the 60s and 70s. Sawyer made a dictionary, English WAPO Vocabulary, in 1965 and published articles on the grammar and vocabulary and some cultural notes in the 70s and 80s. Sawyer also recorded some 40 hours of elicitation and conversation with Laura Summersall and some other remaining WAPO speakers in the late 60s. And these recordings, which are available at UC Berkeley, provide a valuable resource in the phonology of the WAPO language, because they're the only record we have left of how the language was pronounced and how it sounds. These recordings also include vocabulary that wasn't published in other sources. Sandra Thompson and Charles Lee also worked extensively on WAPO. They published several articles in the 70s. And with Joseph Sungyul Park, they published the most recent reference grammar of the language in 2006. So Laura Fish Summersall was considered the last fluent native speaker of WAPO. So that was her first language growing up. Her mother was incapacitated or ill when she was a child, so she had to stay home and care for her mother. So she didn't actually go to a government boarding school like her peers and siblings. So that enabled her to acquire WAPO as her first language. And she also spoke one of the Pomo varieties through her father's family. Since her passing in 1990, the WAPO language has been generally considered to be extinct by linguists and anthropologists. As an example, both Wikipedia and Ethnologue list the language as an extinct language. Thompson et al., who worked with Laura Summersall in the 80s, said they could find no other speakers of WAPO besides her at that point. However, in this current project that I'm involved in, several of the participants have reported that they have family members who retain passive knowledge of the language. One of the participants is a grandfather. We brought some word lists to him that were from the Sawyer Dictionary, and he confirmed most of them as being correct, with a couple exceptions. So we estimate there could be as many as five or so passive speakers remaining in the community who retain some knowledge of the WAPO language. So this current project, which we've decided to call Okel, which is language, some background. In March 2012, I met WAPO community member Desiree Harp, who is a student at San Francisco State University. She and her mother, Christy Gabaldon, had been using the Sawyer Dictionary on their own to learn WAPO words and phrases, but they weren't quite sure how to read it because it's written in, you know, linguistic notation, Americanist letters. So initially, Desiree approached me through a mutual friend and to ask for help in reading this dictionary, reading how the letters are read. And that's how I got involved with working with Desiree and Kristen. Another friend of theirs, native language activist L. Frank Manriquez, who is a family friend of Desiree and Kristen, she's been encouraging us pretty much every step of the way since last spring. So she is an active participant also in this project. And within a few months of Desiree and I starting to work together, last spring, we had learned the working orthography that Sawyer was using and had begun learning some of the basic grammar of the language that, as it was presented in Thompson et al. In June 2012, participated in Breath of Life at UC Berkeley. This is a week-long workshop that brings together California Native community members and linguists to explore UC Berkeley's archival material, which is very extensive, and to work on language learning and other cultural activities. And we found, of course, the workshop to be a great experience, which we connected with and shared with other Native Californians in the UC Berkeley linguistic community. Desiree and Christy really did enjoy the conference very much, and Christy was able to write a few paragraphs about her daughter in WAPO, and that was the first time she'd been able to use the language really in her life. So she was very, very pleased with that. In the summer of 2012, I personally decided to make my dissertation the creation of a new comprehensive reference grammar of the WAPO language using all available published and archival material. And my dissertation is going to focus a lot on the phonology and phonetics since that hasn't been studied previously or published on previously. At the same time, a cousin of Desiree, Joanne Torres, who's a student at UC Davis, she joined our project. So we started last summer to kind of begin planning out how we would proceed with classes and materials and stuff. And as I mentioned, we decided to name the project Okel, which is word, voice, or language in WAPO. In October 2012, the three of us presented a proposal at the WAPO Tribal Council meeting for that fall for a WAPO language class that would be open to the community. For the proposal, Joanne Torres, who is an artist, prepared a visual presentation of the WAPO creation story. So she completely hand-drew and illustrated this thing I'll show you in a second, including the WAPO names for the main figures involved, especially Hoot, which is coyote. And with the support of the tribal chairman afterwards, we initiated the WAPO language classes in November of last year. So here's a picture of Desiree actually holding that strip. So each panel shows a different stage in the creation story. Joanne is there on the laptop. Christy is there in the center in the white shirt, and then there's two other participants in our class with them. Language class currently meets every Saturday morning at the tribal headquarters in Santa Rosa, California. And Desiree, Joanne, and I are the principal ones responsible for each week's lesson. So we take mostly the vocabulary from Sawyer's dictionary and grammar stuff from Thompson's reference grammar, a few supplements from some other sources as well. So along the three of us, there have been anywhere from 3 to 5 regular participants each week in the class. And several other relatives of them have expressed interest in joining the class at some point. Here's another photograph, a little hard to see. This is just class in session. Everyone's working on, looks like the family trees we did. We learned kinship terms a few weeks ago, and we made, each person drew a picture of a tree with all their kin people drawn onto it using the WAPO words. So each class session consists of first a prayer to the creator asking for blessing and assistance, a vocabulary review from the previous session, grammar review from the previous session, then speaking and listening practice involving one-to-one and one-to-group questions. So this often takes the form of, say we've been practicing how to introduce oneself and ask for a name. So the person would, one person would start and ask the person next to them and get a response, then that person asked the person next to them, and so on around the circle. And then we would ask across the table and stuff too. Then introduction of new vocabulary and or new grammatical structures, speaking and listening practice of those new items, and then finally a game session or art activity that utilizes the new items. So that the family tree thing was one of the art projects we did. We also did a matching card game for animal names. So we drew, you know, two cards of like the same animal, all and a big group of animals. All the cards face down. You probably know the matching game where you pick up one and you have to remember where the other one is. You keep going through the cards. And each time we did that, we would say the name of the animal. So that was one of the practice. So it's the material we covered so far as far as the language. We went over the sounds of the WAPO language with special focus on the ejective sounds, which of course give English speakers a hard time. And there's 6 of them in WAPO. As well as the difference between the dental T and the retracted big T as we're writing it. So dental T versus alveolar T. And between plain and aspirated stops, for example, K versus K. And probably the most typical, plain and versus glottalized sonorants. So a regular M, M versus M, M, glottalized. We've also done basic phrases, including hello, what are you called, I'm called, thank you, and good. We've started on the oblique pronouns. There's two sets of pronouns. The one is used with the verbs. The other is used with the copula, or the verb to be. And this set, so e for my, me for your, they for his or her, this is used with to be and also is used for inalienable possessions, which in Wapo would be family member terms, body part terms. So e tse'e means I am, for example, but then e na'a is my mother, e na'a. We've gone over the Wapo kinship terms, which are very elaborate. They have different terms for elder versus younger sibling, as well as for elder versus younger siblings for each parent, and then those siblings, spouses, and then so on, cousins. And we've gone over a few animal names, such as tonchi, which is cat, tsitsa, bird, eshu, deer, akala, bat, etc. And mete and keo, which are woman and man. In the picture, this is Desiree in her bear hat, tsitsa, and some other participants. That's her mother next to her. We've come up with a working orthography for use in the class to avoid using the Americanist symbols. So some of the replacements we made were, before I get to that. So the Americanist symbols use, for example, C for the TS sound, C hotcheck for ch, and S hotcheck for sh, which are not familiar symbols or not used familiarly to English speakers. So for our class, we wanted to create an orthography that would be easier to use and to learn. So our criteria for that would be they could be easily typed on any computer without needing special fonts. They would be consistent orthography, so it would be, you know, one sound, one letter. And it would be relatively easy to interpret for an English speaker. So what we came up with is using TS for ts instead of the letter C, CH for ch instead of C hotcheck, and then SH for sh instead of S hotcheck. The underdotted T we replaced with a capital T. The middle dot, which is used for long vowels, we replaced with a colon. The glottalized sonorants, which were written with apostrophe, we started writing with an underline because the participants felt that the glottalized sonorant sounds to them weren't very similar in sound to the ejective stops, which are written with apostrophe. So they wanted a way to distinguish those two sets from each other. So they decided to do underline for glottalized sonorants. And then finally, we decided to write the glottal stop with an asterisk because it was felt that writing an apostrophe, which is the usual thing for a glottal stop, looks too much like punctuation or like a contraction. And we felt that the asterisk kind of looks iconically like a little pop sound, like a glottal stop. One potential ambiguity is that the sequence TSH could be TS plus H, which is aspirated TH, or it could be T plus SH, CH. So that's an ambiguity, but fortunately, T plus SH is pretty rare in the language. Those two sounds don't usually go adjacent. And then the use of capital T might be problematic in the future because obviously we'd not be able to use capital letters for another context. Another picture. So some of our future plans. In the short term, we plan to continue the language classes and encourage additional enrollment from other community members. The core group that has been attending the classes plans to increase their language skills and has already been sharing basic vocabulary with family, members, and friends. So what we've been learning in the class has already been kind of spreading out to the community. One group member has been checking our dictionary derived vocabulary with his grandfather, who is a passive speaker. And we found that this phrase, ikalikitmi, which was recorded in the Sawyer Dictionary as, how are you? The grandfather felt that the more appropriate meaning for that was, what's wrong with you? So we decided to change that. We used a different phrase, ikalikame, which was actually directly passed down from a Wapo speaker to Christy Gobaldon. So that's what we've been using for our universal greeting. Medium term, we're working on teaching materials for an expanded language program. Joanne Torres, who's a visual artist, is working on a children's book that will impart traditional stories and will be entirely in Wapo, so that hopefully will be done at some point this year. Desiree Harp, who is an accomplished singer, actually a very accomplished singer, she does national tours for singing among Native American communities in the U.S. She is working on an alphabet song, and also she created an original parentalian in Wapo for use as an invocation in ceremonies and public functions, which she's been using before each class, and she made this actually at Breath of Light. As I mentioned, I'll be doing a reference grammar of the language as my PhD dissertation. I'm going to try to get everything that's ever been published on the Wapo language and everything that's not been published all together in one volume. So that's my contribution. And then all three of us will be making a fully comprehensive bilingual English Wapo English dictionary, because the Sawyer one we have only goes from English to WAPL, so you can't look up WAPL words in it. So we'll have a bilingual one hopefully in the future. Long term, once a critical mass of competent speakers is created, full immersion classes and groups are planned. Desiree Harper's extensive experience working as a mentor for urban youth programs in San Francisco would like to eventually initiate immersion youth camps. And her specific idea was to have youth engage in culturally relevant service projects. So, like I mentioned, she has a lot of experience in doing this, so she's going to start organizing these in the near future once we get a little more advanced with the language learning. So she believes it's one of the best ways to recover both the language and the traditional culture. Now I have a couple of videos, I'm almost out of time. Let me play maybe just two of them.
Ikali Kamet. My name is Wade S. McLeod Jr. and I am participating in the WAPL language class. And I'm really excited about participating in this class because it's waking up a sleeping language. My grandfather, that was his first language spoken. That was, it was his first language since he was two. And then his second was Spanish, then English. But now he only speaks English, but he still speaks the WAPL language. I'm very excited. I'm happy. There's no words I can actually, that I can put in a sentence how I feel. I'm just thankful that the language was recorded by Laura Somersault. I'm thankful my grandfather, remembered the language, so I can help everyone go forward with the language and not hoard it. Well, this class, I hope to see one day when you choose a language for school, it's just not English, French, Spanish, Italian. I hope one day you can actually pick a California native language, and one of them being Mishwa WAPL, a UKN family language. I'm thankful for my ancestor Laura Somersault for her recordings, because most languages are, I don't want to say completely lost, but they're sleeping. They're just hardcore sleeping. And I'm just thankful that ours can be awakened, and eventually we can teach all our younger generations and other natives that want to learn a language as well.
That's Hutukulu, Wade McLeod. Hutukulu is owl. And I'll go to, here's Desiree, Simito, hummingbird.
So I come from the Mishwa WAPL tribe, and my Auntie Laura Somersault was one of the last fluent speakers. And I heard that she had recordings at UC Berkeley. And I also knew that there were books that were available. And so I decided that I wanted to learn the language. So I wanted to try and get the recordings for myself. And then I met this guy, and he was a linguist, and so I thought to myself that it would be really cool if I went over the recordings and the books with him. And then he started helping me to understand everything, and then eventually he started working with me full time because he did his dissertation on our tribe. And then we were able to get everybody in our tribe to come together and start speaking. And so now every week what we've been doing is we've been meeting and we've been learning the grammar, learning the vocabulary, and talking. And Aaron has been a very big help because we are learning the language in a very systematic way, and I like the way that things have been going. My hope is that everybody can start using the language in their everyday life, and my hope is that we can help people to understand how important it is to learn the language, just because it's a big part of our culture. And I think that just getting people to be interested in learning about the culture is one of the big goals that I have.
Yaka.
I have a couple questions. First, do you know of any other languages in like the San Francisco Bay Area where this kind of thing is happening?
Dr. Garrett probably knows actually more than me.
Litsun would be a good example. Chochenyo also.
Litsun and Chochenyo, which are Ohlone languages, right? Chochenyo is like the East Bay, is that right?
And, yeah.
Are you from the Bay Area?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm trying to go to UC Berkeley, so we'll see. But also, are you thinking about maybe trying to introduce maybe language classes or like cultural classes to local elementary schools?
That would be great. I think it's a ways down the road, but we'd like to. The participants have mentioned that they'd like to have classes in the local schools, the ones that, especially that WAPO people
are
attending.
Yeah, like local.
Mm-hmm. In Sonoma County, Santa Rosa. Yeah.
I'm interested in that because in Australia it's a it is an issue for the languages that are sleeping, I like the way that goes. Not mentioning any violence, the issues about how to, if you like, recover. I'm just interested in the protocols and relationships you've got with other groups and how that's negotiated, if you're doing that.
I don't personally yet. I mean, I've met a few Pomo people who are mutual friends, Desiree, but the Pomo especially have been, for a very long time, have been interculturally mixed with the WAPO, intermarried, and a lot of vocabulary exchange between WAPO and Pomo languages. So that, without knowing a lot more about what the Pomo are doing, I think that would be good to cooperate, coordinate in some way. And as far as vocabulary, we haven't gone to this yet, but I've been thinking about ways to, fill in, supplement gaps in the vocabulary and in the attestation. And of course, we could borrow words from English or Spanish, which is probably not the best way, but there's also, we could coin new words. As far as from related, Yukian languages, WAPO is actually the best documented of all of them. I was looking at the Yuki materials a few weeks ago, and they're pretty paltry compared to WAPO. So for it'd be almost better the other way to have a Yuki project borrow from WAPO stuff. But those are all options, and there could also be WAPO loan words in Pomo languages or other neighboring languages that weren't recorded by the linguists who work with WAPO. So that'd be one way to get some vocabulary back also. Maybe in the future there could be an effort for unified orthography, because a lot of these languages have similar phoneme inventories, not identical, but similar. So there could be some coordination, I don't know. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could just describe a bit of the socioeconomic context that WAPO people come from, and whether what sort of educational achievement is sort of normal in that community, and how that sort of features in language revitalization from your experience?
Partners, they're both university students, so they're obviously affluent enough to attend university. Not all of their family is that well off, so there is, this area does have some poverty.
Yeah.
And in Native American communities in the U.S. in general, that's the case. The poverty and other problems is higher than for the Anglo population or for other groups. And then as far as culturally, really they are very culturally, there's an awareness of being WAPO and of some of the traditions and songs. Desiree and Joanna participate in traditional dances with Pomo people. But they're also part of the mainstream U.S. culture at the same time. I'd say they're fairly typical for a Native Native people in the U.S. in that respect. You know, they're in both worlds, and there's not, for them in particular, Desiree and Joanne, there's not a lot of barriers to them at least participating in this or in, you know, furthering their education, unfortunately, but that's not the case for every youth there. There are youth who are in much more dire circumstances. So hopefully that's something that can be addressed too. Other questions? Yeah.
What are the general community attitudes towards their language? Are they receptive to speaking it?
From talking to my partners, there's a lot of interest among some of the people in the community, but just like with a lot of communities, there's other things, that like other kind of rivalries and things happening between different families. And some of the reason that a lot of these partial speakers weren't known is because some of them are from families or groups that are kind of at odds with each other and kind of didn't want to share things with each other. So that happens a lot. But in general, it seems to be positive. We got like a lot of people interested at the tribal meeting when we presented and joining the class. There was nobody, you know, voiced any criticism of it. So we hope that with some results in these next couple of months, we can my partners can go back to their families and other people they know and show like we've been learning this and we'd like you guys to come and join us and to get more people involved that way. So it looks very positive. There's a lot of will, a lot of enthusiasm for continuing. More questions?
You
want to
play that
on
video?
Oh. There's the third video, unfortunately, when I was testing it, the video didn't come up, just the audio, but I can play it for you. Let's see if this works. So, can you please introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Joseph.
Might be hard to hear, too.
Junior. I'm a Mission Wapo from Sonoma County. And this language class that we started up, I am definitely enjoying it and learning the language. Trying to incorporate it in my life. The words I have been learning, I try to use them as much as possible.
Can't hear it.
No.
Yeah, it came out really low volume.
Some question about the names. Are they names that they got?
Okay, so
during
the people.
Class, are they names that they've always had?
These are names that they actually chose in the class.
Oh, okay.
So, Hutuklu, which is owl, that was chosen by this guy, Wade. Meinawime is otter, so he chose that. Desiree chose Tsimito, which is hummingbird. And my name is Melkau, which is salmon. yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
So the orthography, you maybe talked about this, it was kind of fast and I wasn't able to catch everything. It seems like it's phonetic rather than phonemic.
It's kind of like in between right now.
Okay.
One thing is that since I haven't gone through all the recordings yet, I'm not sure, especially for vowels, I'm not sure what allophones are present for all the vowels. There's some disagreement too between the different linguists who have worked on WAPL and whether there's phonemic vowel length or not. So we've been showing it, but Thompson and Lee, when they worked with Laura Somersault, claimed they couldn't hear any difference in length anywhere. Whereas Sawyer was like really careful and to say that this word has length and this one doesn't. So it's strange that there'd be that much of an opposite thing. So that's something I'm going to kind of look at. I'm trying to make it phonemic. I've made a few tweaks. Like at first I was writing the accents that Sawyer has for stress everywhere, but since stress is word initial except when there's a prefix, I feel I can leave off the accent unless it's not word initial. So that's like a simplification that we've been doing. So I guess I'm trying to lean towards it being phonemic because I think that's the best way to do any kind of writing system.
Thank you very much.